what we said in the preview to this game, do not bet against Real Madrid in the Champions League. What unfolded in the 2017-2018 Champions League final, a Real Madrid victory. And it came in slightly odd circumstances. Welcome to Mark in English's final podcast of the 2017-18 season. Ion Aliga delivering a review of the Champions League final. 3-1 it finished in Kiev to Real Madrid. And Dolce Avone, who is the editor-in-chief of Mark in English, joining me to talk about this game, had the joy of staying in Kiev to watch the game and at the stadium, and I understand wasn't sleeping in the airport overnight, so it's not been too bad a night's sleep for you as we talk on Sunday morning.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say too bad a night's sleep, but it's been not very much sleep, I'll tell you that. It's been a very busy few days, and obviously after last night's celebrations and things like that, not that I was celebrating because I'm a neutral, as you well know, but other people were, and other people were quite depressed walking through the streets of Kiev at night as well.
Yeah, you can guarantee that there's a certain stratification of emotion in Kiev at this moment in time. And we'll go on to discuss the game chronologically as it happened, but just to get a sort of immediate summary of how you felt the game unfolded and how Real Madrid won this game, I must say that three of the four goals that went in left me completely speechless.
Honestly, it was a really weird game. That's kind of what I'm taking from it. It's not when you go to a final and it kind of ebbs and flows. Like, for example, last year's final against Juve, where it was like Real Madrid were on top and then Juve were on top, and it was kind of back and forward, and it was kind of the atmosphere kind of built as it went on. This was just strange. I don't know why it was like that, but it was just kind of a game, and then there were like four or five incidents peppered through weirdness. It's a really difficult one to explain, kind of how it felt watching it in there.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, at the start of the game, I kind of, you know, you're looking out for these sort of signs as to how the game is going to go, and Real Madrid didn't really turn up so quickly into the game. I thought Liverpool started with their usual sort of confident selves, and I think that kind of put Real Madrid off, in a sense. Real Madrid, maybe in those opening minutes, were just testing the water to see if Liverpool we're going to fail. And, you know, Liverpool started probably the better team.
No, yeah, like, up until Salah's injury, Liverpool were the better team. It was something that I think it was Marcello said pre-match in his press conference, that they'll kind of feel Liverpool out in the first 10 minutes or so, and then kind of see how they can break them down or what they need to do to break them down. But it kind of seemed like after they had kind of felt them out, Liverpool were just like, no, we're going for you. And they really caused them a lot of problems, because I think so much focus was on Salah. And I think a lot of people expected Marcello to maybe be a bit more defensively aware. He did not care about Salah at all. There were times where, like, Marcello was almost it was operating as a left winger, with Salah kind of there by himself on the right side, and Sergio Ramos was coming across to mark Salah, which obviously that proved to be quite beneficial for Real Madrid. But it was just that their whole kind of focus was on, like, right, we need to stop Salah. But it wasn't Marcelo, it was Ramos and Casemiro, and to an extent Varane as well.
Well, that thing about Marcelo you say, is it just shows that Marcelo, I mean, he's an old dog in a large sense. He doesn't change for no man, does he? He really just gets into his game and plays like a winger, like a traditional Brazilian fullback is a way to put it as well. And the Salah injury did change the game. You could tell afterwards that not only did Liverpool get worse, or certainly their confidence was shot, but Real Madrid at that moment, I think as well, they kind of thought, you know, here we go. And the Ramos, I mean, we can debate about the Ramos thing. We'll never know whether he meant it or not. But for me, it being Sergio Ramos, there's always that little thing in the back of my mind as I watch him, thinking he knows exactly what he's doing when these sort of moments unfold around him.
I don't think he meant to injure him. I'll put that out there. I don't think he thought, right, I'm going to get this guy injured, because as much as Sergio Ramos is a master of the dark arts, I don't think he wanted to do that.
Yeah.
But I think he knew exactly what he was doing when he had a hold of his arm and he was pulling him to the ground. I think, and then obviously the injury happened, and it was essentially a freak accident. I mean, how could Ramos have plotted to dislocate Salah's shoulder before the game? If he can do that, then he is a master of the dark arts.
He spends a lot of time training to do that. If he does do it in the wrestling, and probably if he did it in training, then he'd injure a lot of Real Madrid players as well. So probably isn't something that Zidane would want him to do. And you know, half time, 0-0, game is set. What is about to unfold is almost a shock in a sense, isn't it?
I couldn't believe it. I'll be honest with you. I was sat there watching it and I'm thinking, what is he doing? Why is he throwing the ball at Benzema?
I sent a message to my mate saying he's just thrown the ball at him.
It literally just threw it at him and it bounced off where it went in. You're like, what is he doing? Like, this isn't training. This isn't where you just muck around. This is the Champions League final. Like, I think. It honestly made no sense. I was sat next to Liverpool supporting journalist from 442, and he just had his head in his hands. He didn't know what to say or do, because what can you say? It was ridiculous for that to happen in the Champions League final, to make such a massive, massive mistake. And I think, you know, from there, that obviously went to his head, because it got worse.
Well, yeah, I can't imagine. Karius is the same age as me, and I can't imagine how I would react in that sort of circumstance as someone who's, this is the biggest night of their life, of their life. So this isn't a Iker Casillas sort of 37-year-old goalkeeper. This is someone in their mid-20s who is, you know, on the biggest night of their life, who makes an error. Liverpool get back into the game as well, and you'd think that perhaps the fact that Liverpool get back into the game 1-1, a perfectly good goal that Sadio Mane scores, you think from then on that resets it and the game goes back from there. And obviously the mistake comes for the third goal, but if you want a game breaker, if you want a moment in history to arrive for that second goal, it does. And it comes from Gareth Bale, of all people.
Yeah, no, like, it came on, I think it was 3 minutes after he came on, he scored that amazing overhead kick. And the thing about it was the technique and awareness to be able to do that was very difficult, more difficult than Ronaldo's one against Juve earlier on in the season. It was just he didn't have as much time to set up for it and just completely kind of flummoxed everybody, because you see, like, the way I seen the flight of the ball coming, I thought, right, he's not going to hit this. And the ball just deviated and it went in. And it was almost unexpected as well. It was some strike. Honestly, it was a privilege to be able to watch that. And if you're going to lose a Champions League final, then to lose it to a goal like that, you kind of have to just take your hat off and say fair play, because that was brilliant.
Yeah, the thing that struck me about that shot was the dip. How you watch it and it's over the bar by a good yard for most of the trajectory of the flight, and then it dips in at the perfect moment. Karius has no chance. The third goal goes in. I mean, it's a massive error. It's Bale gets another goal. That kills the game. It's Real Madrid's 13th European Cup triumph after that point. And, I mean, how do Real Madrid just keep winning? Because I consider them on a par with the Bayern Munich team that won it three times in 1974, I think it's the 76. And they had some, you know, they had some great players. And they're obviously a team that are known for being very good, that Bayern Munich team. But they're not considered one of the world's great revolutionising, perhaps dominating, so they are that, but they're not considered necessarily one of the great football teams of all time. Is it an injustice for Real Madrid to not be considered one of the great teams of all time, or are they a team that has to be considered that now?
Yeah, you have to do it now. They've won four of the last five Champions Leagues. They've won three in a row.
But it doesn't feel like they've been at, I mean, the best team is kind of the wrong way of looking at it, but the semi-final, got a bit lucky. Final, got a little bit lucky. Quarter-final, again.
Zidane said this in his press conference after the game and before it. Look who they've beaten to get here. They've beaten PSG, who just bought Neymar, and everybody goes on about how amazing they've become. Beat them. Beat Juventus, who are the best team in Italy by a country mile, and Juventus have been to two of the last three Champions League finals. They beat them fair and square. And then they beat Bayern Munich, who are the champions of Germany and the best team in Germany and have been for a long time. It's not like they've beaten some random team. This season, they've not beaten some random teams from Lithuania, from Austria, and then from Poland to get to the final. They've beaten essentially the best teams in the three countries they've played. And then they've beaten a Liverpool team who have had an amazing run to the Champions League final and have played and have what I think they're the competition's top scorers and the first team that's had three players to get into double figures in a Champions League season. So they're playing the best teams and beating the best teams in the Champions League. So I think, for me, I think what you're getting at in terms of people don't look at them in the same way is that when you look at, say, the Ajax team of the 70s or even Barcelona of 10 or so years ago, these are teams that, say, changed football a little bit.
Yeah, totally.
That makes sense. Whereas this Real Madrid team doesn't change. It's not a team that people think, oh, we need to change how football is played because of this Real Madrid team. They're not like that. They're just a team that's full of great players and they've got a coach who just wins trophies, and that's what they do. And I think that's why maybe they're not considered the greatest, but for me, you have to put them up there just by what they've done.
Well, also, when my working theory on this, and when you say about the fact they just keep winning, I think it's the fact that there is such a psychological effect it has on the opposition that when they play Real Madrid, they think we're going to get beat. Or even in the back of their mind, subconsciously, they just know that Real Madrid, when they play whoever they play in the Champions League in particular, they're going to win. And as an opponent, that must have such a huge effect on you. And probably, you know, you might even be able to attribute that to Karius's errors in the final.
I think so. Like, I mean, with Karius's errors are obviously things that you don't expect to happen. You can't plan for. So they happen and you just kind of have to deal with that at the time. I mean, the two approaches of the two teams are quite interesting as well, because even in the training session on the Friday before the game and in the warm-up before the game itself, Liverpool were doing kind of really strict drills, like proper, there's a method there. And they were doing that in the pre-game training session and in the warm-up. Whereas Real Madrid just had a kickabout twice. They didn't really do it. They had kind of wee warm-ups and stuff like that, but they didn't do anything where you think, right, there's a reason they're doing this. They played an 11-a-side game in half the park on Friday for most of the training session. And then on the warm-up, they played, 5v5. And you're just thinking, is this overconfidence? Or is it just a team that are so relaxed because they've been there so often that they don't need to be as focused, if that makes sense, than an opposition side who is the first time they've been in a Champions League final for 11 years. So the approaches were quite different and interesting before the game.
So let's think about where Real Madrid go from here then to sort of round off this chat, because after the final, there was Cristiano Ronaldo saying that he's enjoyed his time at Real Madrid and he'll announce his future in a few days. Gareth Bale says that he has to be playing first-team football week in, week out, and that his agent is going to discuss that with the club and seemingly make moves away. In a sense, is that therefore meaning there's a chance that this game represents perhaps an end of an era for Real Madrid? If they don't continue this winning streak that they're on, if they lose Ronaldo and Bale, which seems to be a possibility all of a sudden, is this a real turning point for Real Madrid where perhaps we start next season as the Neymar era and things might change from then?
I think if you're going to lose Ronaldo and Bale, well, I don't think you will lose the two of them. I think you'll lose one or the other. I think Ronaldo's situation's a bit more mysterious because he just made these kind of flippant comments. Then I think he tried to backtrack on them later on in the evening that they were maybe taken out of context or that he shouldn't have said them. Whereas Bale's were quite clear. And he said he would like to stay at Real Madrid, but he needs to play and he feels like he should be playing. So if there are assurances that, right, okay, you'll play, then he'll stay.
Zidane won't give him those assurances, though.
No, no, he didn't. Zidane was asked about it after the game as well, and he said that he understands that every player wants to play and thinks that they should play in every game, and he gets it, but sometimes the football doesn't work like that. And I think Gareth Bale knows that as well. I think he knows that football isn't, I need to play every single week regardless because I do. And that's just not how it works, unfortunately, for him. So, but I think it depends on Ronaldo. If Ronaldo does want to leave, then you can say, Gareth Bale, right, Ronaldo's leaving, so that means there'll be much more opportunity for you to take a kind of starring role in the team rather than kind of always being in Ronaldo's shadow. But it was really strange. I thought it was really strange that Ronaldo and Gareth Bale, immediately after they won their 13th European Cup, their third in a row, were just talking about if they're going to be there next season. It was weird.
But in a sense, I mean, that kind of chimes in with your talk about their preparation was almost lackadaisical or so familiar that they just sort of approach it like any other game, that these players, they've won their third European Cup in a row, and they're like, yeah, all right, cool, well, that's nice. I'm going to now think about me and my future. That sort of sums it up in a sense, doesn't it?
Well, kind of, yeah. But I just think there are times and places to say things, and that is certainly not the time or the place. I mean, I don't know what you think about it. I mean, do you think that... Where on earth is Ronaldo going to go? Where do you go after Real Madrid?
I mean, is there still the outside chance that he'll do a swap with Neymar for PSG? Is it the case that surely he's not going to consider an MLS or a China or something, because with all due respect to those leagues, he's too good for them. And therefore, it reduces the amount of clubs that he can go to on a financial term in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, like financially, there are very few clubs he can go to. And I think even for the type of guy Ronaldo is, prestige-wise, there's very few teams that he can go to as well. And obviously, I can't imagine he'd want to, say, drop down kind of levels, if you like, to go and play maybe at Sporting in Portugal, to go back there, end his career there. Would he want to kind of take a drop to the Portuguese league? I don't think so. Yeah, I think like he scored 44 goals this season, got another Champions League, probably going to get a Ballon d'Or now as well. Like, he's clearly still good enough for the top level. And if he's good enough for the top level, then why would he want to go anywhere else?
Yeah, well, that is something we are going to have to keep an eye out on at market in English. We'll have all of the sort of reaction to his comments. And, of course, as his future unfolds, it's supposedly in the next few days. So you'll have to keep logging on and checking on what's happening on Mark in English as we update you on Cristiano Ronaldo's future. And that draws to a close the 2017-18 season. Luckily, there was a World Cup to look forward to, and I know you're looking forward to that, Dov.
Yeah, I am. Absolutely ecstatic.
Absolutely. As a fan of the Scottish and Italian national teams, there can be nothing.
I was going to say, it's going to be a fun summer. I'm sure that somebody did say there was something going on in Russia, but I need to check out exactly what's happening.
Well, I'm sure I'll be back in England, as people can probably tell from my accent. But Marca, I'm sure, as a Spanish newspaper, will be having a La Roja on their agenda.
We will be supporting Spain this summer, Mark Mayo. That's what we will be doing.
That's the boss's line, and therefore that is what we're doing. We may or may not be doing a little podcast on the World Cup. We'll decide that at the time. But otherwise, hopefully we'll be back in the new season. And we've been very much enjoying having everyone listen and contribute and retweet and favourite and everything on the tweets that we do for the show. It's always much appreciated. We wouldn't be doing it if people didn't listen to it. So thank you very much for that. And thank you, Dov, for joining me this morning.
Oh, an absolute pleasure. Pleasure to be on, and good work for that you've done all season with you and Jason and Sam and the rest of the gang.
Thank you very much. And everyone can now take off their club hats, put on their country hats if they've got a chance, and enjoy the World Cup and enjoy the summer. And thank you very much from all here at Market in English.